What's up, everybody? Welcome to the TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. I'm Thomas.
I'm Tyson.
I studied exercise physiology and competed in many various sports ranging from wrestling to ultra running. I use that knowledge to combine today's science with ancient wisdom to live an optimal lifestyle and to spread that information onto the masses.
I'm a lifelong weightlifter and I'm obsessed with health and wellness. My degree in biology, with an emphasis in neurobiology, physiology, and behavior, allows me to take a deep dive into the most current literature and bring that information to you.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you'd like to show your support, please rate and review on your favorite podcast provider, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or SoundCloud. Also, sign up on our website, tntwellnessandnutrition.com, for all of our up-to-date content.
Let's get this started.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. This is episode 73. This is going to be part one of a pretty long series on therapeutic ketosis. So pretty much what that means is being on the keto diet has all these benefits, and there are a lot of people throw around the term therapeutic. I wanted to break down really what that's about. So today we're going to talk about really what's a problem with eating carbs all the time, so specifically glycolysis and what happens when you do that. But first, let's do a quick check-in. Tom, how's it going?
All right, so I'm going to try and make this as fast as possible. We haven't met for about 3 weeks, so I'm just going to run through this as quick as possible.
Got it.
Christmas was great. I love seeing all my friends and family. Got lots of great presents. But unfortunately, I didn't get the one that I wanted most. So I asked everybody to give me Amazon gift cards. I mean, I understand, like, hey, that's a basic idea. Nobody really wants to do that for a loved one. But the reason I wanted that is because there's a book that I wanted to buy that costs about $200. So I can't ask, like, somebody to go, hey, can you buy me this $200 book? But if I get, you know, like, four $25 gift cards, that $200 book's now $100 to me. No big deal. That's what I really wanted. But I'm definitely not going to complain that I got friends and family that love me and were giving me stuff. Yeah. I mean, they know me too well, but not quite well enough, because they were giving me, I got some new running shoes, I got new running socks. That was my best gift, was running socks.
Really?
I run out of them all the time.
You just run through them, literally?
Run through them and then throw them away, and I don't remember the last time I bought socks. I've been meaning to buy socks for like 3 months now. I just haven't done it. I love you, Kaylee. Thank you, Kaylee, for buying me socks.
Come through in the clutch.
Like, probably the cheapest present I got is my favorite. It's cool. Weird. If I was 5 years old, I would have been like, what the hell is this?
Yeah.
Cry, kick down the Christmas tree.
Now you're all about
at
socks.
At 30, I'm like running around, celebrating.
Yeah.
So got a bunch of workout clothes, stuff like that. We talked about like water, hydration, and stuff like that. And one thing I've been trying to do is run kind of in a dehydrated state, just to make my body get used to it and kind of just like work harder at keeping my minerals intact and just being a more efficient sweater and not really wasting water unless it really needs to. Because I'm training for a 50K, and a couple months after that I'll be training for a 100K, and a couple months after that prepping for a 100 miler. So I'm gonna be dehydrated for a lot of these longer runs. I'm like,
how long is a 50K in miles?
50K is about 31 miles, something like that.
So longer than a marathon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a marathon plus a 10K.
Got it.
Then like a 100K is about 60 to 63, 64. I mean, all these races are on trails, so I don't know how exact they are. And then a 100 miler, I think everybody can kind of figure that one out.
Yeah.
So I'm just trying to stress my body as much as possible without like overdoing it. So I did a 10-mile run this, like, last weekend. No water. I had a cup of coffee in the morning. I do this run, like, in the evening. No water in between. No salt in between. First 5 miles of that run, I don't know, for whatever reason, they sucked. I thought about, like, you know, I'm just going to end this run early. But after mile five, I was feeling great. My last 5 miles were faster than my first five. Mm-hmm. Like, the perceived effort was way down for that last five. I don't know what was going on, but whatever. So I get home. You know, I've been sweating. I'm thirsty as shit, so I need to go get some water. So I drink a cold glass of water, just pound it, and then I'm like, you know, I still need a little bit more. So the next one I do is, oh, I didn't mean to pound that first glass of water. I meant to drink half of it and then do a salt shot, but I just pounded it.
So you're thirsty.
I'm like, well, I need to get some salt. So I do a salt shot and then do another glass of water to chase it. A salt shot is, for me, it's a half teaspoon of salt. I use good Redmond's real salt. So I do that. All right, now I'm making dinner. So while I'm cooking everything, like, start feeling a little nauseous. Like, my stomach's upset. I'm like, what's going on? Like, I haven't ate anything. Like, what could this be? I'm like, okay, whatever. like, so, like, whatever the food is, I just turn it down low, and I'm like, I need to go lay down for a second. Go lay down, and then, like, I don't know, about 10 minutes later, I just go to the bathroom and just start throwing up.
Wow, really?
Yeah, I was like, I don't know what it was. I don't know if it was just, I don't know if, like, the coldness of the water, like, didn't mix well with my stomach, or if it was just, like, I've experienced this with food before. If I eat too close after, like, a really tough workout, like, I'll just throw it up.
Yeah.
I think that has to do with my body's in a sympathetic state still and doesn't want to digest food. It's still thinking, like, I need to run away from a tiger.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not worried about digesting. So I think that's kind of what was going on there. Just like, oh, hey, you don't need to have anything in your stomach. Like, you're still at risk.
Yeah.
I think it's what the primal body was doing.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, threw up and felt fine after.
That's weird.
But, yeah, I was like, oh, what's going on? So I'm going to limit my runs to, like, maybe, like, a 5-mile run if I'm going to do a dehydrated one and, like, leave those longer runs to, yeah, let me hydrate properly.
Bring a water bottle?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it was a flat. I was running around the city. So, like, I mean, it's basically run a mile, wait at a traffic light for 30 seconds, run another mile, 30-second rest at the next light. Like, it's that type of thing. So it's definitely not high intensity.
Not that hard.
Yeah, I mean, shit, 2 days before that, I did 10 miles, no breaks, with a bunch of hills in it, and was fine.
Yeah.
So, like, I don't really know what was going on there. I just thought I'd share that. Like, yeah, maybe I should. I think I took that, like, dehydrated, like, running a little too far.
A little too far. Maybe. Yeah, I'm not sure what that's about. Yeah.
I mean, who knows, but, yeah.
So definitely uncomfortable, though.
Definitely, yeah. And as soon as I got that out of my body, I was perfectly fine.
Mm-hmm.
I went to the store and got some, like, electrolytes, just because, like, I felt like those would be easier to get down. I don't know if it's really easier to get down or that I drank that, like, 2 hours after I, like, finished running and threw up.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, probably is the time that was the biggest factor, not the actual electrolytes, but
yeah,
just thought I'd get them anyway.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so I think that's about all that's what's new with me.
Yeah.
What about you?
You know, that just makes me think about, I don't know if this is true or not, but I know our pancreas releases salt, like, right into our small intestines, and that's how we absorb water, right? We absorb water with salt. Maybe your pancreas specifically was depleted in salt from your long run and all day without water, right?
Okay.
Which means without any sort of minerals, really. Yeah. And maybe the water sat in your stomach too long. Like, you didn't want to empty your stomach because it wasn't going to absorb it anyways. So instead of going through your GI tract and just being let go as diarrhea, you threw it up.
Okay, yeah, I could see that being possible.
Yeah, I don't know, though. Maybe.
Because, I mean, I definitely went from, like, a lot of salt to, yeah, salt's not that important, so let me just add it to food. Like, mm-hmm. I was doing a salt shot every morning when I woke up, and then most of the time before, like, my longer runs, I would do a salt shot.
Mm-hmm.
So I was basically, like, lowering my salt intake by, like, a full teaspoon a day,
mm-hmm.
which is, that's a lot of salt.
It is a lot of salt.
So, like, maybe my body just didn't have enough time to adapt to it
yeah.
while I'm putting it through, like, stressful situations.
You're doing it, yeah, you're doing a lot. Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. Just thought I'd share that information.
Yeah, something with salt, probably. But, yeah, as far as me, not much is new, of course. Like, I'm always doing the same thing. I've been doing a lot of research on just this topic of nutritional ketosis, and I kind of just want to get into it because
that's a really broad topic. So, like, to say, oh, I just got into this, it's like, no, you probably went through, like, fucking hundreds of pages of material for this.
But that's why I wanted to talk about it, because, you know, you've heard that before. People say ketosis is therapeutic.
Yeah.
And that's where it's like, period. No one ever goes, but why? And so that's what really kind of triggered me to say, like, but why? Like, why is keto therapeutic? Like, okay, it's healthier for you, but why? And honestly, over the past few weeks, we've been able to kind of bank a few episodes. So I've had more time to be able to do more research, which is a blessing. You know, normally we have to crank this shit out every week, but I don't know. It's just, not that I always say this, I don't need reinforcing on how I eat. Like, I'm pretty comfortable that we're on the right track, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I feel healthier and I'm in the best shape of my life at 31 versus when I was like 19, 20. Like, my body composition is like so much easier to maintain. I'm eating foods that I like. When I was like healthy and lean, or I don't even know healthy, but if I was
lean,
when I was younger and lean, like, I was eating a lot of food that I didn't want.
Yes.
So, and like exercising all the time. So it's kind of like, yeah, this is just easier to maintain, tastes way better, and I feel way better.
Yeah, so we're on the right track. And I feel the exact same way. So I was just like, what really about the keto diet is therapeutic? And I just mean therapeutic in the way that it helps heal our body. So, you know, people go keto and some of the problems they've been dealing with their entire life, or at least the majority of their lives, like, magically get better. things their doctors told them were chronic and they would have them their entire lives. So think with like autoimmune issues, like ulcerative colitis or Crohn's, or even like diabetes, put that in remission, or cancer. Like there's definitely keto or cancer keto stories out there.
Well, the argument with diabetes, or the narrative around diabetes, is that it's only going to get worse. And it cannot get better. It cannot. You cannot reverse diabetes, is the popular belief, and it's only going to get worse. And you're basically going to die a slow and painful death.
Yes.
That's pretty much what any primary care physician is going to tell you. And it's like, the only thing we can do is give you drugs, and when those stop working, we'll give you more. Mm-hmm. Like that's basically what the narrative around diabetes is.
Oh, man, the diabetes narrative is so sad. I actually had a conversation recently with somebody who was a nurse about diabetes, and they're like, no, you cannot cure diabetes. And I was like, well, maybe cure is a iffy word to use.
Well, I don't know with a clear definition of cure, but I mean, like, if you have a cold and then you're no longer suffering symptoms from having a cold, I would say you cured yourself of that cold. If you have diabetes and then you're no longer suffering the symptoms of diabetes, I mean, like, I think you cured it. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe the actual definition doesn't fit that, but that's what I think of it.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure the actual definition doesn't fit that. So technicality, I mean, from a technical standpoint, maybe they're correct, but put diabetes in remission is 100% possible. And you can definitely, all the symptoms of diabetes can be completely washed away.
Yeah.
Yeah, blood sugar and all that stuff. And we're going to break that down in a few weeks, keto and diabetes.
Yeah, the one of the, or not the arguments, but the metaphors around that is, if you get bit by a mosquito and you get malaria, and then you cure yourself, and then you get bit by a mosquito and get malaria again. I mean, like, but in that the time between those mosquito bites and that you were healthy, you cured yourself. Like, you no longer had malaria, even though you got it again later. I would think it's the same thing with diabetes. If you go on a low-carb diet and you eat proper food, you no longer have diabetes. But as soon as you change your diet and start eating shitty carbs again, then you have diabetes again. I think it's pretty much the same thing.
I agree, 1,000%. Yeah. So, yeah, all of these benefits from the keto diet, a lot of people assume that you need to be in deep ketosis, and I say deep in air quotes here, because really what the fuck does that mean? You know what I'm saying? That's kind of just a random term, no one knows, but that's not true. Like, you get all these benefits just from being in ketosis, period. Just from having a low carb diet, you get these benefits. So my definition of ketosis, and I think most people's, would be 0.5 of in your blood of beta hydroxybutyrate. So you get that very easily if you just follow a normal low-carb diet. So you don't need to be in deep ketosis to have these effects.
I also think if you're being efficient, you would have lower ketone levels. Because if you have, I mean, the popular ways to measure it are either urine, blood, or breath. Urine is completely waste products. Breath is waste products. And then your blood is what's waiting to be used. So, I mean, if you're efficient, you would basically just have as much in your blood as you're going to need.
Exactly.
Like, so you, like, 0.5 should be plenty versus 5.0. Like, why do you need all this extra in your blood if you're not using it?
Not using it. Yeah, it's just hanging around for no reason. Yeah, exactly. So, but this first episode of the whole series on therapeutic ketosis, it really have to frame it in the sense that what's the opposite? So the opposite of ketosis is glycolysis, which is just the burning of sugar for fuel. So I really want to break down how problematic glycolysis is. And because when we have two choices when it comes to the fuel our body uses, it's either fat or carbohydrates. Protein 99% of the time is not going to be used as your primary energy source. You know, it just doesn't want to be, it's not efficient, but we either can live off fat, we can live off carbs. And simply put, the body runs better off of fats. It just does. Fats are a cleaner fuel source compared to glucose, and they provide more energy and less negative byproducts, which is great. And I'm not saying glucose is terrible. Glucose is great for cells that lack mitochondria as a last resort fuel source, or if energy is needed very quickly, like in a contracting muscle. You know, if you're LeBron James and you need to jump for a dunk, glucose is awesome, you know?
Yeah, like that's why we store like glycogen, the stored form of glucose. That's why we store it in our muscles in case we do need to jump over something, run away from a tiger, chase down a buffalo.
Awesome.
Yeah, like it's perfect for that.
It's perfect.
And then we also keep it in our liver in case we need to wake up in the morning. You do need blood sugar to wake up in the morning. If you are going to, you do experience any of those things, like you do need that extra glucose from like your liver, just in case your glycogen in your legs run out. Okay, well, I think it's going to be pretty difficult to pull some glucose from your chest down to your legs. So get it from your liver through your bloodstream. Makes a lot more sense.
Exactly. So, but the thing is, like,
glucose is not a good fuel source to run off of 24/7, 365. It's like no one needs jet fuel in their body all the time. It's just not smart. So one of the reasons ketosis is therapeutic is simply the fact that when you run off of fat for fuel, your body isn't exposed to these harmful glycolytic byproducts all the time. So we've talked about this a million times, how important our mitochondria are. And right now you're currently listening to a book about mitochondria.
I am trying.
Trying to. Yeah.
It is. I should read it. It's definitely not like a good listen to.
Yeah.
It's going to take me a few go-throughs, but luckily there's a great PDF to go with it.
Okay.
So I'll talk more about it in the next coming weeks when I'm like a little bit further along. Yeah.
It's honestly awesome book, but I read it. So I think you're right. It is probably a better book to read than listen to. But talking about that, I want to start the conversation here with our mitochondria. So why should you care about the health of our mitochondria? So the amount of energy our mitochondria are producing is vital for our overall health. The amount of energy available to the cell is directly tied to how well the mitochondria are working. So people often say the mitochondria are just a powerhouse of the cell, providing energy and that's it. But that's a huge understatement. Go ahead.
Like, what happens if your car runs out of fuel?
Your car is useless.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's pretty much what we're saying. Like a powerhouse. Oh, yeah. That's everything.
Yeah. And I just think, like, if your phone, all of us have a smartphone nowadays. If your smartphone runs out of battery, how good is your smartphone?
It's a paperweight.
It's a paperweight. It's $1,000 paperweight. Exactly. So it's just not good anymore. And so you don't appreciate the battery or your gas until it's gone. Or, like, it's from a battery perspective, is dysfunctional. Like, say it dies after 10 minutes of use. And it's the same thing with our mitochondria. So how can we maximize the amount of energy our mitochondria produce? And we can do that by burning fat for fuel. So to put this in perspective, just some hard numbers, we get 36 ATP from burning glucose, but we also get 48 ATP from burning fat. That's 25% more ATP. And ATP is just what our body uses for fuel. So think how much more you can do with 25% more energy. That's crazy.
That's a lot.
You know, for me personally, that means more workouts, more reading, more doing what I love to do.
And we also have so much more fat available. So not only are we getting more out of it, but there's more of it.
Yeah.
So of course you should be using it more.
It's just, it's honestly pretty fucking simple, you know? And if that doesn't help, just think how much you can do if all of a sudden you made 25% more money. Like, you'd be like, that's a pretty big deal. You know, that would change most people's lives.
Like, another way to think of it is, like, what if you had two different jobs, but one would pay you 25% more, and you were able to work at that job more hours than the other one? What would be the point of even having that other job? I guess those few instances where you're not scheduled and you do have that extra time, but it's like, yeah, you should put all your focus on the one that pays more, and then you have more hours.
Yeah, that should be the priority. Exactly. So, yeah, so a simple way to understand how important mitochondria are is to understand how many of them there actually are. I don't think people understand this. So each human contains 10 million billion mitochondria, making up 10% of our total body weight. So I don't know how much I weigh right now, maybe 210, 220. I have like 20 pounds of mitochondria in me.
Damn, that's a lot.
That's a lot, 10 million billion mitochondria. So in a high-energy cell like the muscle or the heart, 50% of the cytosol is occupied by mitochondria. Like, these things are everywhere. And the more clean energy these things produce, the better we feel. So optimal energy production is essential if we are to heal from any of our chronic ailments. And this is one of the ways keto is therapeutic. You're finally giving your body the energy needed to heal itself, which is something I think a lot of people go their entire lives on low calories and don't even know it, you know?
Oh, yeah, definitely. If you're trying to fix anything around your house, like, you don't just get to lounge around and be lazy and all of a sudden it magically gets fixed. Like, no, you got to put in some work. You got to put in some energy.
Yep.
Same way our body is.
Same way. So I guess to touch on calories a little bit, if you ever read like the literature on proven ways to extend lifespan, you'll come across multiple studies showing calorie reduction resulting in people and animals living longer lives. Here's a quote. So aging can be delayed in various organisms by a permanent decrease in calorie intake. Recent observations have shown that an intermittent feeding protocol, which need not involve any overall reduction in calories, can also delay aging. So the longevity benefits seen from a calorie-reduced diet come from the fact that it shifts our body to burn fat instead of sugar. so we can get all the longevity benefits of a reduced calorie diet without adhering to a strict low calorie diet our entire lives if we just switch to a ketogenic diet. Like, that's the beauty of it. All the steak you want, all the eggs you want, and you get the longevity benefits.
Yeah, so what you're basically describing there is there's two ways to get these benefits. You could either eat less, or you can eat the same in a shortened window of time. So eat less often, or eat less overall. Well, eating less often seems to be easier, or you can kind of combine the two.
Yeah, 100%. So that's what it is. The low-calorie diet benefits come from a decrease in glycolysis. Like, that's how toxic glycolysis is. Here's a quote. Consequently, it can be argued that the beneficial effects that come from calorie reduction could be from suppression of glycolysis. And I mean, obviously, it's hard to perform tests looking at lifespan on humans. You know, we can't lock people up in a metabolic ward their entire lives. You know, feed one keto, feed one the standard American diet, and see what happens. But usually, like, more times than not, well-fed animals will die quicker than animals on a calorie-reduced diet.
Does well-fed mean ad libitum?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So that means basically they have
access to food 24/7.
Yeah. Their every meal is a buffet.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what ad libitum means. Yeah, calorie restriction means they're pretty much they're allowed a certain amount. They can't exceed it. So it's basically,
even if they're hungry.
Yeah. It's going to hometown buffet versus eating at home.
Yeah. And honestly, being on a low calorie diet your entire life, you need an iron will. You really would. Because that's a willpower game, because you're going to be really hungry.
Well, I don't think you could do it for your entire life unless you really just don't have the access to it.
Unless you're forced to, right? Yeah, third world country type situation. Yeah, that's true. So what about glycolysis is so bad? So, and honestly, it goes back to our mitochondria. So our mitochondria are specifically designed to run off of fat for fuel. So fat can be directly taken into our mitochondria by L-carnitine and processed directly. There's no pre-processing required. And a little side note, L-carnitine is only found in animal source foods. It's not found in a plant kingdom at all. So it's another win for the animal source foods. Our body can synthesize it, but good luck if you're fat, diabetic, and sick, relying on your body to synthesize anything. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, if your metabolism is already damaged, good luck having it act properly.
Yes.
Or optimally at that point.
Mm-hmm. So carbohydrates, on the other hand, have to be pre-processed in the cytosol first to pyruvate before they can enter our mitochondria. So this is the primary way glycolysis is dirty. This pre-processing has the potential to release very toxic compounds that hurt our body. Something like methylglyoxal is a big one, which I'll talk about a lot today. And I want to, I guess, just stop real quick. I've read this term with a L and a Y. So it's either methylglyoxal or methyglyoxal. And I'm probably going to say both.
Methyl makes more sense because I've heard that
methyl groups, it's pretty
Yeah, I've heard methyl a lot more.
Yeah, so I've seen it with and without the L. I'll probably say methyl more because that's the way I first read it. But
I don't know if any of our listeners know the difference. And if you do, please share it. Please correct us.
I know, but you have to be a nerd to listen to this shit. Yeah. So I'm sure somebody out there does know. And if I'm offending you by pronouncing it wrong, I'm sorry in advance. But here's a quote. So glycolysis is also a source of endogenous molecular toxicity. The majority of glycolytic intermediates possess reactive carbonyl groups and are therefore potentially harmful. They are capable of modifying proteins via glycation. And glycation, we talked about a lot on the diabetes podcast, is a real big problem when it comes to sugars in the body. So most reactive of all of these glycolysis intermediates are the trioses, so glyceraldehyde 3-phosphate and dihydroxyacetone phosphate. Both can glycate proteins very rapidly. And should you worry about glycation? Yes, you should.
So just a little bit right there. So those two compounds, the glyceride 3-phosphate and the dihydroxyacetone phosphate. Mm-hmm. Man, those are hard.
They are.
So those things are potentially dangerous because mostly they can turn into the methylglyoxal. So it's basically like, think of those trioses as basically like a dog. A dog can be dangerous or it might not be dangerous.
Well, they're very, they're potent glycators in themselves.
Like, so like, all right, hear me out.
Sure.
So they're potentially dangerous. They can be, they might not be. Mm-hmm. But the methylglyoxal is a dog with rabies, which is for sure dangerous. Like, that for sure is going to be harmful. So like a dog, it could be friendly, it might not be. The methylglyoxal is a rabid dog, definitely not friendly.
100%. Okay, great point. Yeah, that's a good, I guess, metaphor. Yeah. So glycation is a problem that's really associated just with aging in general. Like, go down, look in the mirror, say you're 35, you know, you're not in your prime no more, I'm sorry. All those wrinkles, that's glycation. You know, some of those aches and pains you feel in your joints, that's glycation, okay? That's just aging in general. So here's a quote, and I'm going to have all these studies on the website so you can check them out if you really want to read them. I recommend it. They're all really good. So at the biochemical level, aging is characterized by the accumulation of these altered protein molecules. And these proteins become altered from glycation. So glycation is a big deal. And glycation plays a major role in many age-related pathologies, especially in diabetes. So this is why diabetes, in its most simple form, is accelerated aging. So with high blood sugar all the time, you accumulate these glycation products called AGEs at a much faster rate. And AGEs just stands for Advanced Glycated End Product. So that's what these glycated proteins turn into eventually. So what might take the average non-diabetic 10 years will take the diabetic 4 in terms of accumulating these AGEs. So it's not, diabetes sucks, man, in a lot of ways, you know?
And the worst part about it is you're prescribed a diet that's only going to make it worse.
And medicine that's only going to make it worse. Yeah. So here's a quote. It is at least conceivable that decreasing metabolically generated protein AGEs could help decrease the overall age load and could have beneficial effects by suppressing aging and extending lifespan. So that pretty much just means decreasing glycolysis.
Yeah, and the ways you do that are either you reduce calories, which means you're reducing carbohydrates along with it, or you reduce the amount of time that you eat, intermittent fasting.
Yeah. Or a ketogenic diet and just cut out carbohydrates.
Yeah.
So, but even more reactive than glyceraldehyde and dihydroxyacetone is the glycolytic byproduct methyl glyoxal, which we talked about a lot, or we talked about earlier. And this shit is toxic even when administered in low levels. It's super bad for you. And I want to, a quick caveat here is that I'm about to go on a rant for like 20 minutes about why sugar is bad. And I kind of wanted to stop first because there are people out there who do fine on high carb diets.
Yes.
And people are going to make, I mean, if anyone out there is a critical thinker, you're going to make the connection that I've ate high carbs and I'm not dying. Carbs can't be that bad. You know what I'm saying? But this happens really a lot, this methylglyoxal production, in people that are sedentary. So glycolysis has a pull to it. So if the product created, which is ATP, is needed, something like methylglyoxal will be created less often. So this is one of the ways athletes get away with high-carb diets. The need for ATP is always there. You know, they're always doing shit the majority of their life. So they regenerate a cofactor called NAD a lot more, and that's needed to keep the methylglyoxal production in check. But this is not the case for the vast majority of people. How many people has cereal in the morning and then whatever, 100 grams of carbs, and then sit in their car for an hour and their commute to work?
Yeah, so it's basically glycolysis is constantly running, so you're creating these harmful byproducts.
And, but you don't need all this energy. Yeah.
And these harmful byproducts, or potential harmful byproducts, they can be recycled, but they're not going to be, at least not at the rate, because you keep creating more and more of them because you're going through glycolysis all the damn time.
Yeah.
So eventually, all those like little dogs that you're creating are eventually going to turn rotted.
But the thing is, you're going through glycolysis all the time, but you're not going through it fully as far as exercising and using those products.
Yeah, so like that's a great point. Like, you can get rid of them, but they're just sitting around and building up because you're running through it all the time, but never using it as a fuel.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's kind of the way around it. You know, I mean, don't get it twisted. High carb diet is still going to be not as healthy as a high fat diet from the fact that carbohydrates are so reactive, but if you are, you know, you're a beast, you train every day and you want to just run off carbohydrates, go ahead. You know, you're not going to build up these things as much, but it's still happening in your body. So methylglyoxal is generated both spontaneously and enzymatically from glyceraldehyde 3-phosphate and dihydroxyacetone phosphate via phosphate elimination. So you pretty much just jack a phosphate and then they'll turn into methylglyoxal. So methylglyoxal, I might just say MG. Maybe I'll just start saying
You should just say MG.
Yeah, because I'm going to pronounce that shit wrong eventually. So MG is cytotoxic, which means it's just toxic to all life, and is capable of glycating and cross-linking proteins, as well as causing damage to lipids and DNA. It has a pro-oxidant effect in smooth muscle cells and neurons. It inhibits mitochondria by reacting with transition poor proteins. It provokes organelle dysfunction and increases reactive oxygen species production. MG can also inactivate glutathione peroxidase irreversibly, which can also very likely provoke oxidative damage. And glutathione peroxidase, that's just our primary
antioxidant in our body, which our body uses to kind of clean up this mess. So MG in itself can provoke many of the harmful biochemical changes that accompany normal aging.
And not only is it creating all these problems, but it's also eliminating your best chance of fixing those problems.
Vicious cycle.
Yeah.
That's what you call a vicious cycle right there. So guess what decides how much methylglyoxal we have in our body? Yes, the amount of carbs we eat. So here's a quote. The intracellular MG concentration is therefore determined by the rate and persistence of glycolytic activity. It can be argued, therefore, that continuous glycolysis would generate more MG. Persistent glycolysis would markedly increase intracellular glycation potential towards proteins, lipids, and DNA, possibly overwhelming the protective activities of naturally occurring antioxidants. So what does continuous glycolysis sound like? Breakfast carbs, lunch carbs, dinner carbs.
Eating 6 meals a day spread out 3 hours a day.
All carb-based.
Yeah.
That is persistent glycolysis. That's all bad.
So, wait, all those healthy grains that we've been told about, there's, like, no way that they can possibly be healthy?
None.
Yeah.
Zero. There's nothing. I watched a video. I don't know if Nathan's going to listen to this or not. If you do, Nathan, what's up? But he sent me a video of somebody had a kind of a counter opinion to ours, you know? And this guy was like, yeah, maybe for carbohydrates, you can choose some healthy grains. And I started laughing my ass off that someone thinks that any grains are healthy.
I mean, maybe there are some healthy grains, but if there are, we haven't figured them out yet.
Hey, it ain't brown rice, let me tell you. Okay, because that's what this dude was referring to. But go ahead. But yeah, so pretty much methylglyoxal is some pretty toxic shit. And the more carbs we eat, the more methylglyoxal we have in our body. So it's just all bad. So reactive oxygen species, which another word for like free radicals, that's the thing antioxidants kind of fight against. So reactive oxygen species generated outside the mitochondria can, by methylglyoxal, can damage the mitochondrial membranes, including the permeability transition pores, which causes the cell not to function optimally, and that will start to show the signs of aging. So when mitochondria become dysfunctional, methylglyoxal generation is enhanced because glycolysis increases to compensate for the lessened amount of aerobically derived ATP. And that's how ATP is derived inside our mitochondria, is aerobically, which means it uses oxygen.
And, which is the preferred way.
That is the better way by a million times. And so this response, this mitochondria telling the nucleus to kind of upregulate glycolytic kind of proteins to help them burn more sugar, that's called a retrograde response in the cancer world. And it's one of the key steps in cancer formation. And I was hoping actually to get that book so we could look into that shit more. But whatever, I'll just buy that book myself,
I guess. One day we will.
Yeah, I know. But that's we're going to talk about keto and cancer as well, and that the retrograde response will come up again. But needless to say, the more sugar is not good for cancer. It's fucking terrible.
Well, just talking about that, so I put a really big post on our Facebook page today talking about that, and that's the...
About the retrograde response?
Essentially.
Oh, really?
Well, basically talking about persistent glycolysis and preventing cancer.
Okay.
So I'm in the middle of a 5-day fast right now. I'm day 3. Day 3 is where autophagy really starts kicking in. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of things going on there. But like the main reason I'm doing a 5-day fast, the main reason I gotta do these throughout the year is because like both of my parents have been diagnosed with cancer. I'm pretty sure I've talked about that in the past. Like, I don't know for sure that it's not DNA related, that it's not getting spread through the genes. So I'm going to do what I can to not get it. And let's face it, cancer's everywhere. Like, I don't really know what causes cancer, but it seems like it's damn well everything. We're blaming everything.
Yeah, for sure.
So I'm doing it that way. So me fasting means I'm having the minimum amount of glycolysis possible. So I am not damaging any mitochondria. And then autophagy is also kicking in at the same pace, so that anything that is damaged is going to get wiped out first. Like, so what autophagy is basically is just we break down damaged cells for their amino acids. And our bodies aren't stupid. If you're snowed in a log cabin, you're not going to use your front door as the first source. You're going to use your cabinets, your chairs. So that's what's going on there. Those damaged mitochondria are going to be the first things broken down to prevent the spread of cancer.
Exactly. Yeah, it's just cellular recycling. It's what it is. And everybody should do it. Everyone should do an extended fast at least once a year.
Yeah, it's a few different reasons. You're preventing glycolysis. You're also cutting off glucose, which fuels cancer cells. And then you're also damaging or destroying any of those cells that can potentially be cancerous. It's a great combination.
Oh, it's a win-win-win on every front. Yeah. It is. So here's a quote. Persistent glycolysis could provide a continuous source of mitochondrial damage and reactive oxygen species generation in continuously fed animals, whereas dietary restriction, or in this case keto, would suppress glycolytically generated glycating agents such as MG and thereby decrease the occurrence of macromolecule damage. It is suggested that most glycolytic intermediates, especially MG, can provoke many of the biochemical changes normally associated with aging, including mitochondrial dysfunction. Boom. Pretty much more carbs, more methylgalaxyl, the faster you age and the closer you are to death every day. Unless, this shit's bad.
Unless you are going to be running to work every day.
Yes.
And being active all day throughout your work, running home to burn up all that glucose.
And even then, this is still happening, but just to a lesser degree.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? It's still a dirty fuel no matter what. This processing the cytosol is a problem, and it's a problem that fat does not have. And that's the beauty of it, you know? And I think that's just so... I don't know. It's just once you understand really how the body works, and I know I'm a little, I guess, I don't know, biased, right? Having a biology background, and really, I feel like I understand how the body works. This shit is simple to me. Like, it's the answers are here. It's just I understand it's a little complicated for people, you know?
Well, it has to be simple, or I don't understand how anything would have made it this far if it wasn't simple. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, humans are smart. We're probably at our smartest stage, but we're at our unhealthiest because we probably... don't know. We know enough to be dangerous, but not enough to actually know the whole picture.
Yes.
But like our, I'm willing to bet we're smarter than our hunter-gatherer ancestors, but they were healthier than we are. I mean, humans got unhealthy when they started introducing carbs as a primary fuel source through agriculture.
Yep.
Almost every anthropologist will agree with that.
Yes.
When you look at animals throughout the animal kingdom, I mean, I think almost every animal has some form of ketosis.
Yeah, pretty much.
Even the ones eating like a high-carb diet, mm-hmm. they have the gut microbiome to convert that into fat.
Yeah, just like cows.
Yeah, so I mean, like, pretty much everything's in a ketogenic state.
Yeah, or at least runs off fat for fuel.
Yeah, the only animals that I know that get cancer are the ones that have a fucked up diet created by humans, like us, dogs that we have as pets.
Yeah.
Dogs in the wild don't get cancer.
Definitely not.
Yeah.
Oh, I know. It's crazy, man. It really is. So, we do have... like, I just talked about all this crazy stuff with methylgalaxyl and how bad glycation is from sugar in our blood and just sugar byproducts that cause damage. Our body does have naturally occurring systems that protect us from this damage. So the two biggest ones are carnosine and glutathione. So carnosine is a very potent anti-glycator. This is just a molecule found in food. So carnosine binds to methylgalaxyl and it adducts it, so it removes it from the blood supply. Here's a quote. So MG induces hypertension and decreases wound healing. Think of anyone with diabetes. They're going to have high blood pressure and they're going to get a cut on their foot that's never going to heal. That's diabetes in a nutshell. And carnosine has been reported to reverse both of these processes. So carnosine is great if you're going to be diabetic. However, carnosine is only found in animal source foods and it's especially high in red meat.
So does that mean carnosine, like any carbohydrate source, won't have carnosine in it?
No.
So isn't that a pretty good indicator that we're not supposed to eat carbohydrates? Because if they're causing damage, like it's a poison, but it doesn't have the antidote. So it's just a poison.
Yeah.
Like a lot of other poisons come along with the antidote, so it's not really a poison. So like
poison.
Sorry, man. Hey, I'm confused from that methylglycoxyl and all those other big words.
Uh-huh.
So like, yeah, if it was a problem, nature should have its antidote or we're not meant to eat it.
Period.
I mean, that seems really simple.
100%. Yeah, you're not going to find out any plant-based diet, period. You will not. We can't synthesize it, but again, good luck if your metabolism is already dysfunctional as shit. So,
and that's only in like optimal conditions if you have all the other amino acids.
Precursors. Yeah. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Which you probably
most people
won't have.
Yeah, sorry, most of you probably don't. Yeah. So the other one is glutathione, and glutathione is a master antioxidant. And this gets rid of methylglyoxal enzymatically and turns into lactate. So lactate can then be burned as fuel or turned back into glucose. If you're interested in that, you can look up the Cori cycles, so C-O-R-I. If you're, you know, if you're a gym rat, you're used to lifting weights and feeling that burn, go look up the Cori cycle. That'll give you the science behind that.
So is glutathione found in carbohydrates?
Oh, sure ain't. Definitely not. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's the two. So that's our two cures are not found in the source. So it's not a source.
It's not a source. Yeah. Yeah. So something people don't know about glutathione is that it's dependent on zinc to perform these reactions. So Zinc is a cofactor for the glyoxylase enzymes. There's two of them, glyoxylase 1 and glyoxylase 2. So without zinc, these reactions won't occur. So which foods are high in zinc?
Would it be carbs?
Definitely not. Wrong again. So animal source foods, especially red meat, are very high in zinc. It's really hard to get adequate zinc on a plant-based diet. So there's a little zinc in nuts like almonds, and grains are fortified with zinc, which is smart of them to do that. So like your cereal will have zinc in it, but don't get it twisted. It's not naturally found in those grains. It's just a vitamin they sprinkle on the top.
And I would imagine it's not very bioavailable from either one of those sources.
That's true. Yeah, because even stuff in the nut, there's so many anti-nutrients in nut that are going to bind to the zinc. Good luck absorbing it.
Like, it's probably the reason that it has zinc is because of those anti-nutrients, and which is also the same reason that you're not going to get it out of it.
It's funny, right? Yeah, that's funny. When you start to understand this shit, it's just crazy. But also, the ketogenic diet upregulates glutathione production, which again is just that master antioxidant. So that's what our body uses to clean up a lot of these free radicals. So the ketogenic diet makes our body better equipped to deal with methylglyoxal, just period, you know? And I also want to mention, just going to finish it with this, that you know the guy Chris Masterjohn?
Yes, yeah.
Dude is such a tool, by the way. He's so arrogant to me. I just don't. Me and him do not vibe at all. Not that I ever had any personal interaction with the guy. But go what you're going to say.
No, I mean, honestly, his name, he sounds like a superhero or like, I don't know, like a video game character.
Yeah.
But honestly, if you look at the way he looks, like, he doesn't fit his name. He does not look like a Chris Masterjohn.
Definitely not. Yeah, at all. No, dude.
When I hear Chris Masterjohn, I picture Sean Baker.
Yes, beast.
That's what I'm thinking of. Like, That's a pretty badass name.
No, but close your eyes and picture a big-ass nerd, and that's him.
Yeah.
You know, no well, offense, I'm a nerd.
Not a big-ass nerd. Just
a skinny nerd. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's him.
Sean Baker's a big-ass nerd.
Yeah, that's true. And no disrespect to nerds. I'm a big-ass nerd myself. But there's a little back and forth with him and a few people on Twitter, actually. And it's funny how this came up, methylglyoxal, right? And I was like, okay, this is relevant to me and what I'm looking at recently. Let me look into this. And he was arguing how methylglyoxal can be created from other things. I was like, okay, let me get into that. I never came across that before. And so I went through, he had a blog post on it, so I read the blog post. And he did mention a few things, so I want to go over it, you know, just for, I don't know, just to play both sides, you know? So acetone, which is a ketone body, can be turned into methylglyoxal. And you might find a few studies showing methylglyoxal going up on the keto diet initially, but this is very misleading. And this is what this dude did, Chris Masterjohn. So you get a couple standard Americans, you know, nice and chubby, love their cereal for breakfast, right? And I'm going to put you on a keto diet, which is pretty much chicken breast and soy oil for 3 weeks. And I'm going to measure some blood markers. That's what these keto diets are. And guess what? Their acetone levels are probably through the roof because initially on a ketogenic diet, we produce more acetone because we're not efficient at producing body fat. So if you have hella acetone around, some of this acetone is going to create methylglyoxal. Therefore, they had elevated methylglyoxal levels. But these levels would have leveled out, one, if they were eating a normal, like a proper ketogenic diet, in our opinion. But also, if you just gave them more time, a month or two, all these things would have leveled out. So it's very misleading.
Yeah, and you're about to go into a little bit more of the reason why, too.
Yeah, exactly. So obviously, like I said, if you're more fat adapted, you're more efficient and you produce less acetone. And the vast majority of acetone, we simply breathe out. You know, it's a waste product. But even if all the acetone did turn into methylglyoxal, only 2% of the ketone bodies produced are acetone. It is a minor player. Pretty much non-existent. It's the vast majority of the ketone bodies are beta-hydroxybutyrate, and that cannot turn into methylglyoxal, that cannot be glycated. It is a very healthy, clean fuel source. But, and here's the point that no one seemed to mention when talking to this guy, all the carbs you eat, 100%, have the capacity to turn into methylglyoxal. That's because every carbohydrate must flow through glycolysis for processing. That's the kicker. So this guy is arguing that, no, it's not just carbohydrates, it's also ketone bodies. I'm like, is he technically right? Yes, he is. But yo, we're talking about 99.999% of people, that does not pertain to them.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about a very, very small amount. 2% of the ketone bodies are going to be acetone.
Yeah.
Like how we talked about at the beginning of this podcast, how like there's different ways to measure it, and how most of them are pretty much useless. And that's because like they're measuring stuff that shouldn't really be prepped like there. Like, so, yeah, 100% versus 2%.
Mm-hmm. And that's 2% in even a bad situation.
Yeah.
Like 2% initially. So it's just when 100% of carbohydrates can be converted into these things. So I don't know. His argument I thought was complete trash.
Does acetone directly turn into methylglycoxal, or does it turn into one of those intermediates and then turn into it?
No, it turns directly into it.
Okay.
Yeah, it does. But the chances of it happening are slim. It's just not, it does not happen very often. Sorry. And he also mentioned that amino acids can turn into it, so let's look into that. So, threonine, which is an amino acid, can turn into methylglyoxal. So, it can occur when your body converts threonine to glycine. But again, this isn't a major source of methylglyoxal either. Just think how much threonine is converted into glycine compared to the amount of carbs eaten by the majority of people.
And there's also other uses for those amino acids. Like, the only use for carbs is to go through glycolysis. So, yes. Like you said, 100% of it is potential. I mean, like, we have so many different uses for amino acids that, I mean, like, okay, maybe in the worst circumstances, but, I mean, like, that's really, really rare.
Really, really rare. And just think, like, of the Christmas tree of all the shit protein can do. Okay, down this big-ass line, threonine can turn into glycine. Okay, cool. That reaction can generate methylglyoxal. Okay, cool. Bro, we're talking about 0.0001 grams a day. And most, 99% of people don't eat enough protein anyways. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's big guy's argument. He was like, no, it's not just carbs. It's protein and ketone bodies as well. And I just disagree. He's technically right. But in the grand scheme, for most people's concern, he's wrong. I don't like that guy.
Well, I mean, it's basically comparing, like, could I win the lottery? I mean, yeah, it's possible. The chances are really small. But versus could somebody win the lottery? Yeah, somebody's going to win the lottery.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's true.
That's the type of numbers we're talking about. Like, we're talking about an individual versus, you know, thousands, millions of people. Like,
yeah.
The rates aren't even close.
Not even close, yeah.
So. Which is definitely not a reason to, oh, well, I just shouldn't care about what I eat because I still run the risk of it.
Mm-hmm.
Carbs are pretty damn dangerous.
We've only
just talked about one reason, too.
Yeah.
Several others.
There are several others, and we're going to get into it for the next few weeks. So, buckle up, man. This shit gets complicated. Sorry in advance, but we're going to just break it down why running off fat is the ideal fuel source for our body. And if you understand the biochemistry of it, it is clear as day. It really is.
Yeah, and even if you don't understand the biochemistry of it, I mean, it's not that difficult. Like, okay, right now it's January. We live in a pretty big agriculture area.
Yeah.
I mean, like, agriculture isn't even nature. Like, we hijack nature to provide more fuel sources. I drive by empty fields all the time. How am I going to get carbs? I don't know how to get carbs. I run in the fields or, like, go run through trails. There's no carbs available.
Yeah.
Like, how am I supposed to be eating carbs right now?
It's too cold.
Like, I mean, and this is going to be going on 4 months, and it's been already going on 4 months.
Yeah.
So, like, there's a good amount of time that Mother Nature just won't let you eat carbs.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, come on, listen to Mother Nature.
Yeah, seriously, man. She's screaming at you. Just listen. Yeah. So that's it for today. I just wanted to touch on how glycolysis is really dirty, and we should not run off carbs 24/7, 365. You're just asking for trouble. Did you have a tip of the week this week?
So I know this is a little bit after the New Year's, but I mean, it's still relevant. So I've used this in the past. I know I talked about a 19 for 19 last year, and I don't know if I talked about the 18 for 18 before that. I don't really know how long we've been doing this podcast or not.
At the end of 18, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So instead of doing a New Year's resolution, I create a theme, like a one-word theme or like a little phrase, and then since the year's 20, I create 20 goals that are centered around that theme. So my theme this year is conquer. Last year, my theme was community. So a lot of my goals were have dinner with my parents once a month. Make sure I hang out with my friends once a month. I don't count hanging out with you because I do this once a week.
Yeah. And you wanted to join a running group, which you did.
Yeah, I did that as well, even though that wasn't part of my goal.
Oh, okay.
But yeah,
that's community.
That's a community too. It's just about doing that stuff. Trying to find like holes in my game, and I'm going to address that. So my theme this year is conquer. The reason I have that is I got two really big physical goals this year. So like one of them is to run 100K. Which is going to be twice as far as I've ever ran in my life. And then a couple months after that, I plan on running 100 miles, which is going to be almost twice as long as that. So I got some pretty big goals I want to conquer. And then also, like my word was going to be endure, but I thought that meant like you could translate that into like, I just want to get through this year. And I don't want to get through any year. I want to conquer that shit.
Yeah, we're crushing shit around
yeah,
here.
Yeah, like, I'm not, my goal isn't just to get through. I mean, if that's what happens, that's what happens. But, like, that's not my goal. My goal is not that little. So, yeah, I'm trying to conquer stuff this year. So, that's what it is. Those are some of the goals. I got a bunch of other ones. I'm saving up for a wedding, trying to conquer that shit, trying to conquer my finances, trying to conquer my health gains, all that type of stuff.
I love that.
So, yeah, just one little goal or, like, one phrase, one sentence, and then build 20 around that. Not all 20 have to fit, obviously. But, yeah, so that's a couple of them.
I love that. No, I love that, man. Conquer. I mean, it just, like I say, we're, the way we live our lives now, we stumbled across something. We're not just living anymore. We're thriving. And that's the difference.
Yeah, well, the minority is thriving.
I meant me and you. Yeah. But, yeah, 100%. Yeah, good luck trying to keep up. But yeah, that's another episode in the books. Hope you guys liked it. You can find us at TNTWellnessAndNutrition.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, so feel free to reach out anytime.
Yeah, please show your support and rate and subscribe to our podcast. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and YouTube. Also, feel free to share this with a friend or family member if they're, you know, I know it's the New Year's, so a lot of people are trying a ketogenic diet or trying some new diet trends. This is the time for everybody to do it. And if you also want to show your support another way, we greatly appreciate it. We have a donate button on our homepage. It's a bright yellow button. Hope everybody has a happy and healthy week.